Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your title.
Emil Dekoe, conductor of, let's see, Ghostbusters and Star Wars at Wolf Trip with the National Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, a longtime friend of this show. you've been calling into WTOP a bunch. I think I've even come out and done some of those pre-concert things, Q&A things and stuff with you at Wolf Trap. And it's always a blast. It's one of my favorite, I always say it's one of my favorite things to do in the DC area in the summer. It's awesome. But yeah. Before we get to these specific events, tell me about, just overview. If someone's never been to something like this, why it's so cool to see a movie that you've probably seen a million times, but you've never seen it like this on a big screen with an orchestra. Why is this just so epic and like a gotta do thing in the summer?
Yeah, well, it's, well, for one thing, you get the greatest sound system in the world. You have the National Symphony Orchestra playing these scores, but you have screens on the facing lawn and above the orchestra, bigger than any IMAX screen. It's absolutely massive. But you're able to hear the music only the way John Williams or whoever the composer is imagined it in their head and how they heard it in the studio when they recorded it. There's so much special effects and sound effects and dialogue that cover, even the best of recorded scores. And so to be able to hear, say, Star Wars, the first Star Wars film, with a 85-piece orchestra playing, full out. And so you're able to hear all the music and still all the dialogue and all the special effects sounds. But this massive screen that's like hanging above my head and above the whole orchestra. And also the excitement of being at Wolf Trap. I think the best place to experience live music is outside. And especially in a beautiful national park like Wolf Trap, you're there with the trees and the birds and the smells. You can bring wine, you can bring snacks. And people are always so excited about Star Wars, especially you always see people dressed in costumes from the show, and there's always stormtroopers, and it's like a real event.
Absolutely. And so, of course, we're talking about Star Wars, A New Hope, the very first movie that was released. I've always just said it's just Star Wars. That was the title. You can slap on A New Hope and whatever other cute little subtitle you want, but it's Star Wars, baby. the 1977 original. And it's going to be on Saturday, July 13th. So get your tickets. Do you remember seeing it for the first time? I mean, you and I are going to geek out on the music itself in a second, but like personal memories, did you go see it in the theater when it came out, or what are your first associations?
I saw it later. I was so absorbed with music then, classical music, and wanted to be a conductor. I kind of like missed a lot of films that came out at the time. That was 1977, I think. 79 or 78 was Star Wars, Star Trek, the motion picture, which I only saw many years later. But coming back when I was in college, I think in the early 80s, and seeing it, it was really mind-blowing, because there was never a film, and I love science fiction, it's my favorite genre. Yeah. But since 2001, there had not been a greater film, a science fiction film, other than Star Wars. And it was a totally different take, of course, in 2001, Kubrick. Yeah. But it was unlike any other film that had been made up until that point. And the amazing thing, too, with Star Wars and with Star Trek and Harry Potter, is these films were never meant to be a multi-billion dollar franchise. Star Wars 1977, before it had the New Hope title, was just supposed to be a one-off film. And actually, if you look at it, it's very complete. It has a beginning, middle, end. I mean, they conquer.
I like that.
And it could finish. That could be the end of the whole thing.
Yeah.
But then it went on to, great sequels and everything. But just when you watch it, just try to imagine this is separate. This is by itself. And John Williams' amazing score was the premiere we did of Wizard of Oz. These films were never meant to be seen over and over again. They wanted people to see them once. And they would do a run in the theaters and would go away and maybe come out later on video or something. But it was never their intention to make a cult series and this new kind of pop folk idiom out of these amazing characters that people have embraced and loved.
Honestly, you mentioned the characters. I can't think of a movie, maybe Wizard of Oz is the only exception, but I can't think of another movie, think about a standalone movie that has so many memorable characters introduced into the zeitgeist all at once. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it could have been like Spaceballs. It could have been laughable. You look at some of the special effects, some of that costumes are not quite what they were in the later franchise of Star Wars. Darth Vader, with the plastic thing and all that stuff. But it all works. It's so honest. The storyline, the intent of the film, the spirit of the film. It reaches back to the great archetypal, villains and heroes and hero quests with this young boy, Luke Skywalker, and all underpinned with that amazing, it totally inspired score, one of the greatest things ever put on paper.
Absolutely. And thanks for mentioning the great hero's journey. I know George Lucas was inspired by reading all those archetypes and woven into this epic thing. And like you're saying, we get Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, Chewbacca, Darth Vader, R2-D2, C-3PO. It's ridiculous. I guess Yoda wasn't until the sequel, but pretty much most
No.
of the main character, and Lando Calrissian was the sequel, but most of the main characters that we know were like out of the gate, boom, here you go. Here's the whole world. Here's all this mythology. And it's crazy it all came from one guy's brain for one movie. It is
Yeah. Well, he
amazing.
was really good. He was really good friends with Joseph Campbell, who was a historian philosopher that made a history of archetypal figures throughout human history. And
I
they
read his
all
book. I read
inspired
his
people.
book. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he had a lecture series over in his studio up in Marin County with him. And it's I think he picked from that because it goes through every the Star Wars hero quest, good against evil, is in every culture in mankind. And I think he just
Absolutely.
picked the best and strongest characters and etched them, and John Williams did the rest.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of John Williams doing the rest, that's what this concert is all about. So let's do a deep dive into the music that we're going to hear. And you know it in and out, but I'm trying to think of a way we can kind of break it down sort of in layman's terms of like the different sort of sections of it, if that makes sense. So tell me about the big opening. I don't know if you call it the overture. What you call that main theme where the scrolling text and the title just blasts onto the screen? What music, what instruments are we hearing there? Why is that so, influential?
What's so funny, because it starts when you get the Fox fanfare with
That's
the
right.
famous logo and everything, and then you get a pause, and then you get some words starting to scroll up, and I'm watching the screen, and the screen has the screen I'm seeing is different from the audience's screen. So I'm watching called streamers and punches. So streamers are a line that goes across the screen and it hits the end, and I'm supposed to hit a certain bar of music at that time. And a punch is a splash in the middle of the screen, which is a downbeat. And so I'm waiting, waiting. It goes across, and when I get to the end, it times perfectly with that opening fanfare in B flat, bomb. And just that one chord in B flat major, the way he scores it, everybody knows what it is. It's the opening of Star Wars. You don't need any other information, no other melody, and you get those words on the screen as big as can be, and the audience always erupts and goes insane. That is so thrilling. Couldn't have a better opening to a concert than the
Oh no.
audience screaming
And
with the opening
it
chord.
is the American Film Institute's number one score of all time, but
Yeah, and then you
it
get
is.
the famous fanfare represents could represent the Jedi's, could represent Star Wars in general or Luke's hero quest.
Tell me about
But
some of the other sections that follow. What would you call that theme where, Luke is looking out at, it's like a, the double sunset or
double
whatever,
moon,
that
yeah.
it's beautiful music, but what instruments
That
are involved
is
there?
a great scene because he's with his uncle and aunt who have raised him, and he wants to go. He doesn't want to be a farmer like his uncle. His wants uncle wants to be safe because his brother was killed by the evil forces, and so he wants him to basically stay home. But he really has this burning desire to go out for an adventure, and he goes out and he looks at this double moon and this kind of bleak but beautiful planet. And you hear the very first iteration is called the theme of the Force or Obi-Wan Kenobi's theme. And it's in minor key and it's very mournful sounding, but also very inspiring. And so that's another brilliant thing with John Williams. He writes this like a Wagner opera. So all the themes come. And if you're going to watch it once, you wouldn't even realize it consciously. You realize it subconsciously because you get Princess Leia's theme, you get Obi-Wan's theme, you get Luke's theme, you get Darth Vader doesn't have a theme yet, but it's always very martial. In a unison note, kind of like a menacing minor key, dum bum ba da da dum, something like that goes over and over again. You get Darth Vader's theme in the next film, which is
So the Imperial March, as we
your
all know,
march
is not
is
until Empire Strikes Back
Empire
officially.
Strikes Back, right? And then you
Are
hear
there
that a lot.
hints of it?
There is so the rhythm. You get the same rhythm, that sort of martial rhythm that's very sinister and evil sounding. But I just love that the scene that you mentioned. It paints such a beautiful picture. But no one had done this to this degree, because this is kind of like the height of a genre called space operas or science fiction operas, where it's basically this story told on such a huge campus that has violence and has love and has all these epic things that you'd find in any great opera of the 19th century, but it's turned into a science fiction opera. And so John Williams is the first composer to treat the music that way. It's very complicated and how these things overlap. Also, he's sending out signals. He'll have a little bit of snippet of a tune to warn you of something that's coming up or to give you an advanced knowledge of what the characters are feeling. And I've conducted this several times and I spend, I don't know, maybe 50 hours just this one, this past 2 months with this movie, which I've already done. The score is very marked up with ink everywhere. And when I get to the end, I'm just in awe. I mean, sometimes I get like the hair on my arm goes up just without music, just conducting it in silence, because it's just, it's so original and powerful still. It never loses, I think, the initial power that he wrote in 1977. It just gets better.
That it is an amazing body of work. All in one epic, 2 hour suite. another deep dive really quick into one more, because I'm just envisioning in my head, I'm going to do two radio pieces. So talk about that, what Princess Leia's theme. What all music is involved in that, you know, because I'll cue it up and hit it as you're talking.
Yeah,
about
it's usually because it's a tender kind of, this theme is this Princess Leia as a character, because the other two films, it becomes kind of like her theme, but also a love theme between her and Han Solo. But that doesn't exist yet in the first film. So it's just her theme by itself. It's usually woodwinds, high woodwinds, like flute or oboe, clarinet, playing in a very tender, very quiet way. In fact, it's the most quiet music. He'll bring it back later during some of the fight scenes. It's very quick, and you hear when she's doing something heroic, you'll hear her theme kind of thrown in into this big wash of tumult, and then it goes back to something else. But when you first hear her first theme, it's let me think. It's on a little computer chip, and you see her in a loop, because the computer chip's supposed to get to Obi-Wan.
Yeah, like a little hologram thing. Yeah,
yeah, hologram. But it just plays on a loop, and it says, "Obi-Wan, you're our only hope." And that's the first time you hear her theme very, very quietly, almost like a whisper, before you really know what it's all about. But it's, I can't tell you how, as a musician, as having studied so much music and conducted so many John Williams movies, this really is like, this whole thing is just like a stroke of genius.
It really is. And taking it in whole, in aggregate, all of these beautiful little pieces together, all tied together into one score. You said you get goosebumps by the end and are just in awe. Like, would you take what John Williams did here in this Star Wars score and put it up against the great, you know, classical works of all time? Like it rises to that level.
Yeah. Yeah. No, without question. It has, when you look at the score, when I start studying a score for the first time, I take it apart totally the way I would take apart any piece by Shostakovich or John Adams or Beethoven or whoever.
Right.
And so you do a harmonic analysis, and some of the harmonies are unbelievably complicated. We did E.T. a few years ago, and I was just so amazed that you get these sections that are absolutely atonal. And the thing with movies, and with also work in dance a lot, when people are watching a visual art form, you can be much more adventuresome in music than you can if it's just music by itself, because there's nothing else to look at. But you can do crazy harmonic risks that John Williams does all over the place, and just have this whole section of something atonal or five added chords all together that just make a clash. But it works because you're watching a drama or you're watching a piece of theater.
Right.
And it's as good as anything. It really is. And that's why orchestras around the country, and the National Symphony plays John Williams better than any orchestra I've ever heard, because they know it. It's their music. He's worked with them so many times. They own it. And so just from the first rehearsal on, it's like almost ready to go. It's just so, so in their bones.
That's awesome.
We have so much fun with it, and they respect the music so deeply. They take it so seriously. Sometimes major orchestras, you know, you play pops concerts, and they might not always like the music as much as, you know, so-called serious music. But this, everybody is totally committed, because also it's really, really hard to play. You need a real virtuoso orchestra to produce these sounds. And I'm conducting quietly, on my desk with no music, no sound. And I thought, how in the world are those violins going to play that? It's just this crazy lick of all these notes going flashing up and down. Kind of reminds me of Korkol. There's another like great virtuosic composer.
Yeah.
The golden era.
Yeah, like Adventures of Robin Hood and all that.
Korkol. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you can't fool kids in concerts. You can tell when they're bored. I've done so many kids concerts, and you can't You get a total honest reaction from a symphony orchestra. You can always tell when they're engaged because they don't fake it.
So awesome. All right. Well, again, everyone, that's Saturday, July 13th, and it's going to be amazing. All right. And then after that, on Wednesday, July 24th, there's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows in concert. You won't be conducting that. That'll be Constantine Kitsopoulos playing the Alexander Desplat score.
Those films are really different than the one we're talking about, because as film music got closer to our time currently, the producer insisted on having music throughout the entire film. And I was working with Michael Giacchino on a film he wrote recently, and he and a lot of other composers don't like the idea that they want just music all the way through.
Right.
Star Wars is a huge change. There's 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 6 minutes at a time with no music, just like in Jurassic Park. But now these Harry Potter films, they look like a gigantic tome of music, and it's just so exhausting because you never get to catch your breath.
Yeah.
So kudos to them, because they're going to have a great time, but that's really tricky.
Oh yeah. I can't, I don't know. I don't want to say one's better than the other, but to me, I'm old school. I kind of like moments of silence, but you know, you don't necessarily need it in between all the time.
No. And that way, when you hear music, it means something. If you just have a wallpaper of music, then when you want something special, it's harder to produce that.
Right. Exactly. Either way, it's going to be a great show for Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And then you come back to close out July at the end of this month on Friday, the 26th, 8 p.m. for Ghostbusters in concert.
Right.
All right. Well, I have more than enough. Anything you want to say before we go? How about just invite everyone? Just, say, hey, D.C. area, Virginia, come on out. You're going to have fun.
Everyone in the D.C. area, come to Wolf Trap. It's the best place to hear music, to have a great time. Bring a snack, bring wine. Bring your friends and enjoy movies the way they're meant to be seen and heard live with the National Symphony Orchestra.
Awesome. Hey, I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So good to see you again.
Of course.
Be well.
Right.
Take care.
Be well. See ya. Bye.
Bye.